If a guy, you know, a child like him with a father like you, he can't learn from anybody better than you from what you've been through and the experiences growing up, and then your the recruiting part, you know, playing in college. What have you tried to bestow upon him about what you learned at that same age that he's at now?
Well, one of the things I tried to tell my son, you know, now that he's faced with, you know, some of the things that I've gone through, from, is that I want him to take advantage of all the opportunities and not take anything for granted. And I want him to know that, you know, the harder you work, the more rewards will come your way. I also try to let him know that nobody owes you nothing. You know, Justin, you know, he's a good kid. You know, being a father and being his coach all those years was difficult because, you know, sometimes, you know, they don't want to listen to you because they think they know everything. But we have a really good relationship. I mean, we spend a lot of time, we spend time together all the time, and we go a lot of different places and do a lot of different things together. But I share my experiences with him, too. I let him know how I was growing up in D.C. and some of the trials and tribulations I had to go through, you know, growing up in the city. So, but I really try to instill, you know, some positive things with him. And my wife, you know, she plays a big role in that, too. You know, my message to them was to stress values. You know, understanding the importance of values, commitment, mm-hmm. and staying in your lane, and knowing what that means and how to define that. You know, letting them know that, you know, the values that your parents have taught you, those sacrifices that your mom and dad and just have made for you. You know, that commitment that of getting up in the morning and probably running and doing gases, you know, and things like that. My message was just letting them know to not allow anybody to come in your lane and stop you from staying on that straight and narrow and doing the right thing and being positive and working hard to achieve your goals. And I also wanted to stress to them, you know, athletics or your talent in basketball, just that, it's a talent. You know, treat it like a hobby for the most part, because at the end of the day, when all is said and done and you no longer can shoot a jumper or you no longer can make a tackle or whatever, you're going to need to have that diploma, you know, be it from high school and hopefully from college, because that's what's going to carry you through the rest of your life. That's what's going to give you that opportunity, give you that foot in the door. That doesn't guarantee that you'll get a job, but that means you can compete. You know, if you graduate from college and you have a diploma, at least you have a chance. You know, you're halfway there. And I wanted to let them know that. I said, but, you know, I know a lot of guys that are participating in professional sports, and some of them guys now are struggling, you know, financially, mentally, physically, emotionally, you know, because they didn't, one, some of them didn't finish college, you know, some of them didn't pay attention to their finances, or some of them got caught up into other things. And my thing is, that's why I'm talking about staying in your lane and understanding your value. You got to value who you are. And one of the things I said, and I'll share it with you, I told the kid, I said, why do you think, you know, and I hope I don't offend anyone, I said, why do you think God, in a sense, buried precious metals like diamonds and gold and silver so deep in the ground, you know? He didn't want that to be easy. They didn't want that access. They didn't want it to be accessible to everyone. You got to work for it, you know. And when you get it, you gotta cherish it. You know what I mean? You gotta appreciate it. And you know, so on my way home, I asked my 10-year-old daughter. I said, "Did you understand what I was saying? What I meant by that?" She said, "Yeah, I understood." I said, "Tell me what I meant." She said, "That means you just gotta work hard. If you want something, sometimes you gotta dig harder. You gotta dig deeper. You go hard."
Right.
I said, "You got it. You got it." So that was my message to those kids.
I think those kids came away from that. They're going to remember that, and they're going to get it also. I saw that I saw that Lamont Huntley posted part of your speech on his Facebook wall, and I was able to tape it. I'm going to play it right now, just so people can get a sense of what it was like yesterday. Here we go. You guys, the just the way you were delivering it, and you could tell that the kids there, the people that around there were glued to you from what you had to say, and that's a great line. Stay, you know, the guys stay on your A game, and the girls stay in your lane, because too many times that doesn't happen, and that's a great saying for any kid. I mean, My daughter, when I have her next, I'm going to play her the same thing, just so she can understand the importance of that. She's 9 years old. She's only a year younger than your daughter. So they're at the formative years where they can learn a lot. And those kids that were there at that banquet yesterday, they came away knowing who Julius Holt was for sure, if they didn't know who he was before.
Saying something that was inappropriate. You know, you get these players out here drunk driving, beating up their wives, beating up their girlfriends, and all that kind of stuff. I think the hammer gonna start coming down on them too. I think they need to be prepared to for some of the same repercussions, because we can't continue to put band-aids on bad behavior when it comes to those types of acts. I mean, you know, I've been married now, I think 19 years, something like that. I've never raised my hand to my wife. I mean, I never had a shouting match with my wife. I mean, I just, it just doesn't make any sense, you know.
Right.
So, but I just have to put that in there.
Right. I mean, those are all great points, Julius. Let's move to a lighter subject. Your football career, the time at Arizona. Again, like I said at the outset, that was the renaissance of Arizona football as we know it today. The 1980, 81, 82, that time that you were there, and Ricky Hundley, Tom Tunnicliffe, you know, Vance Johnson, Lamont Hundley, I can go down the list. The biggest, you know, I've, you know, as a writer, I do a lot of like ranking stuff, and I ranked that Arizona win over USC in 1981, the 13-10 win over USC at the LA Coliseum, as the greatest win over, or the greatest victory in Arizona football history. When you look at what you guys accomplished, Arizona was 0-9 versus USC. You guys were a 24-point underdog. You were 0-7 in LA. Arizona, as a football program, was 0-7 at that Coliseum. USC was on a 22-game unbeaten streak at the LA Coliseum. You guys pulled that out 13-10, and that was after you guys were down 10-0, and Marcus Allen had already rushed for like 73 yards in the first 5 minutes of the game.
I was in there on that play.
what do you remember most about that game? And do you still, I mean, is that something that you carry with you every day, that you look back at that game? What about your thoughts about that?
Oh yeah, just to give you an idea, I'm standing in my in the game room at my house, and I've got a plaque that Coach Smith sent me once I completed my master's degree and stuff like that, my degree. And it says it was a salute to your sweet victory. And it's framed. He had it framed and everything. And it's a picture of me on the front page. And, you know, I remember that day as if though it was yesterday. And I remember Coach Smith saying, you know, it ranks right up there with, you know, with getting married and having your kids, and pitching a no-hitter in baseball and scoring 30 points, you know. Just, you know, things you'll never forget as long as you live. I mean, you know, we had no one on this planet thinking that we were going to go into the Coliseum and beat USC. But Coach Smith believed it. The kids on our team believed it. the staff believed it. And for some strange reason, you know, the day before was an interesting day. I mean, the things that took place prior to the game were interesting. And, you know, Coach Smith and Coach Rogerman and those guys, they just had a way of talking to you and making you believe in yourself. And we've always had a good defense. Defensively, that was not to knock our offense, but defensively, we were solid. I mean, I tell Ricky and Lamont all the time, I think they owe me some money for me helping them become All-Americans and big-time NFL players because, you know, the way our defense was set up, it was set up so that the defensive linemen, we made tackles, but we were supposed to make a lot. We were supposed to keep people off of them, which was fine. You know? And you know, but, you know, that USC game was – you know, was unbelievable. I mean, to go there and, you know, to force them to have to do some things that they weren't used to doing. I mean, they were a team that ran the football. They didn't pass the football. So when we had to force them to pass, it took them out of the game, you know. And, and you know, and Coach Smith, all he would tell us every time he come off the field is don't stop. You know, no surrender, no retreat. Don't quit. Keep fighting. Keep fighting. We got him. Mm-hmm. Keep fighting. And that's what we did. I mean, you can see it in every player's eyes, even the guys that were on the sideline. You know, you can see it in their eyes. I mean, you know, it's like he said, you know, 60 men together, you know, can't lose. You know, when everybody's on the same page, you know, paying attention to their responsibilities, you know, you can't lose. And that's the kind of man, you know, Larry Smith was. I mean, I never forget when he recruited me, you know, he told my stepdad at the time, you know, I'm going to be his father while he's away from home. And if he does what he's supposed to do, I'll see to it that he graduates. You know, and he did that, you know, with the help, you know, he kept his word and, you know, he would always stay on me. And, you know, Dick and Pat Dunford, you know, who I consider my mom and dad that lives here in Tucson, you know, they stayed on me to finish school and to live a good life and not forget those memories, those things who helped shape and mold me. And that USC game did that. I mean, we grew up and we, like I said, we had a great defense. We've always had good defenses, you know, Yeah. I get emotional talking about it now because I don't think a lot of people know, you know, what it felt like, you know, to do that, you know.
Right. Arizona obviously beat number one Washington at the Desert Swarm in 93, in 92, but that win in 1981, that's the only road win against the number one team that Arizona's had in its history. And the 1982 year that followed that one up, I've written this a few times, that it's the most meaningful season in Arizona football history, I think, that 1982 season. You guys finished 6-4-1. I'm sorry.
It didn't go to a bowl game.
Right, didn't go to a bowl game. You guys finished 6-4-1. The four losses you had were by 10 points or less. You were 2-1-1 versus the top 10 teams. Should have been 3-1, but UCLA, will say they lucked out there at the end. They came back and tied the game after Max Diaz kicked a field goal with 33 seconds left to put you guys ahead over there at the Rose Bowl. But, you know,
if Bubba Gross would have caught that interception, that game would have been over.
Right.
Yeah.
Bubba Gross, who was the captain of the team that year.
We'd have been done.
Right. It was right in his hands, right? Or did they call a play on that?
It was right in his hands. He dropped it. But you know, Bubba Gross or Al Gross, he was one of the best. I mean, you know, that guy could drill you to 50. Him and Hundley together, you know, them guys, man, I mean, you just wanted to play with them guys. And you wanted to, you know, I mean, they wouldn't allow you to take a break or to rest or not give your all. I mean, they challenge you every day from practice until the day of the game.
In that time of Arizona football, there was a cloud over the program with the pending probation and all that for what happened in the previous coaching staff. And you guys were still able to achieve these great things. That's why I think that 1982 season was the most meaningful in Arizona football history. But, you know, right after that UCLA game, you guys traveled to South Bend, Indiana. And any true blue Arizona fan knows that you guys, you know, upset the Fighting Irish, who were ranked number 9, 16-13 on Max's 47-yard field goal as time expired. Larry Smith called that his most prestigious win later on, when, you know, after he had finished coaching. He said that was his most prestigious win. Again, that victory over Notre Dame, much like the USC win over it in L.A., what did you take from that victory?
You know what? The thing I took from that Notre Dame game, in all honestly, because I was a captain for that game myself, and Kevin Ward, we were two team captains selected for that particular game. And you know what was interesting? Playing in that stadium, I mean, you know, they talk about the history and the Four Horsemen and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you felt that. I mean, you felt that mystique. I mean, you felt like you were in a place that had a lot of history and a lot of, I don't know, legends or whatever. But when we went out on that field, for some strange reason, you didn't notice the people in the stands. At least I didn't. You know, you didn't notice them. You just played. And you played against 11 guys on the opposite side of the ball that you didn't know. And one of the things Coach Smith and Coach Rogerman used to always tell us, and he told us prior to that game, was you need to punch them in the mouth. They don't know you. You don't know them. But I guarantee if you go out there and you punch them in the mouth and you let them know you're here to play, somebody going to give up. You know, it's like that Muhammad Ali thing. You know, Muhammad Ali used to always defeat his opponents before the fights ever took place. It was a mental thing with him. You know, he spoke so eloquently prior to games to where he would get into your head. And football's like that, too. I mean, you know, when you get out there on that field, you know, you have a tendency to remind people why you're there. You know, and if you can get into that, to the guy's head across from you and get him distracted from what it is that he's trying to do, you know, you got him. And I think we did that because we didn't back down. I mean, we were hitting every play. We did drills the week before where we did these pursuit drills where we ran. We literally ran from corner to corner pursuing the ball. You know, because, you know, they had a pretty good quarterback. I think it was Berline, I think it was, and they had Pinkney. And then they had Hunter, the tight end. I think that's who they had. But these guys are real good in space, you know, getting you going one way. And Coach Smith's philosophy for that particular game was we need 11 people on the ball all the time. You need 11 people on the ball all the time. And we played like that. And Coach Rogerman, if you were to talk to any of the guys, his son was going to Notre Dame at that time. He gave one of the best speeches prior to that game that I've ever heard in my life from a motivational perspective. If you didn't want to play football that day and play with every fiber in your body, you should have took the uniform off and got back on the plane and went home. Because Coach Rogan, when he spoke, it was like E.F. Hutton. You didn't hear nothing. You didn't hear a pin drop. I mean, it was that intense. Yeah. And his son was on the other team.
Yeah, he was an intense guy. I remember just by looking at him, it's just his expression. You could look at him, you're like, oh, man, I better act straight or play my best. Yeah.
That guy give you a hug. He'll sit you down in his office. He'll have a real good conversation with you. He never lets you get down on yourself. I think that was the philosophy of Larry Smith's staff. You know, they had a way of letting you know that you were important and that you were valued and that we need you. you know, and that you meant something to them. I mean, you know, Coach Smith, you know, he gave a lot of young people like myself and others that were from inner cities, he gave us some opportunities mm-hmm. that we otherwise wouldn't have been able to get or have. I mean, my folks couldn't, like I said, they passed away when I was in the fifth grade, 30 days apart. There's no way I would have been able to afford to go to college. You know, and this guy took a chance on an inner city kid and a bunch of us. You know, some of us turned out, you know, we finished our degrees and we're living productive lives. I mean, we're doing the best we can to survive and keep our head above water. But I contribute and I owe all that to Larry Smith and his family, you know, because, you know, they kept their word, you know. It was more than just football. It was about being a family.
Yeah. Larry Smith had a lot to do with how, you know, where Arizona is as far as a national program. He, you know, Arizona in that 1982 season, the program went from being a WAC team trying to prove itself in the Pac-12 to proving that it belongs and that the wins over like UCLA in 1980 when UCLA was ranked number two and the USC win in 81. That 1982 season showed that those weren't flukes and that Arizona is going to be a Pac-10 institution. You know, after that four game, after that that win over Notre Dame, you guys went on a four game winning streak. You capped it with the win at Stanford, that includes John Elway. Tom Tunnicliffe outplayed John Elway in that game. I remember actually watching the game in Holland with the halfback pass back to Tunnicliffe for the touchdown. So Larry Smith went to a little bit of trickery in that game and one-upped John Elway and Stanford in that one. That kept a four-game winning streak for you guys. That was magical. And then the following week, you guys played USC. You played USC in another thriller. You guys nearly came back. You were down by three touchdowns in the second half, but you guys almost pulled it out. That was one of the top – I ranked the top 50 games last year of Arizona football. That USC game, even though USC won, the way you guys fought back, and it was 48-41, I thought that was one of the top 50 games in Arizona history. I mean, that must have been, as a player, must have been exhausting to be part of that game.
It was. It was very exhausting, and especially when, you know, in my personal opinion, we should have won the game. I mean, we made a few errors, you know, in the end.
Right.
But USC know that they got out of here with a win that they didn't deserve and that they didn't earn, you know. But sometimes, you know, that's the difference between, you know, being a national champion and being a, you know, a runner-up. I mean, you know, those breaks will fall your way or they don't fall your way. But I don't think we ever went into a game or played while I was here where we didn't go in thinking and believing that we could win, you know, regardless of what people might say when they were calling to the radio after the games. And, you know, some people can be very critical of what took place. But, you know, man to man, player to player, there was never a time when any player went out there and didn't want to win and give their all. I mean, and we had to deal with it and for 3 or 4 days until that next game. And if you were worth your weight and gold, sometimes you needed to get over it real quick and say, you know what, we got another game next week. You know, but that game took a lot out of us.
Right. Yeah, I was going to touch on that. The next game was the game at Oregon, where Oregon had won a game that season up to that point, and they were able to knock you guys off. I think that previous week's game against USC had a lot to do with that, and the fact that, you know, Oregon had nothing to lose. They didn't have a win that year, and you guys were actually playing for a bowl game in that game, and it just came up short. I mean, that as high as that to win again at Notre Dame, that loss to Oregon must have been as low, right? Just the mood of the team coming off that.
It was, and you know, and I can honestly tell you, there was a play that Oregon ran very successfully prior weeks, and we had worked on it, you know, during the week where they would run like a bootleg and the quarterback would keep it and come back the opposite way. And me playing the five technique on the opposite side, you know, I'm supposed to pinch down and keep my eye on him because he's going to peel back. And, you know, sometimes I got a little undisciplined and I was chasing. And as I'm chasing, this guy pivots and he's coming back and running by me. And I never forget on a plane ride home, Cheryl Smith, Larry Smith's wife, she sits on the arm of the chair on the plane and she says, "Didn't Larry tell you that you had responsibilities, that you had to watch for that bootleg, for that guy coming back on the backside?" I mean, that's how detailed we were, and that's how, I mean, knowledgeable his wife was. And I'm sitting up there thinking to myself, man, she knew, and she didn't even come to practice all week. And she knew what I was supposed to be doing, you know. And so, yeah, that hurt. That game hurt a lot.
Yeah.
And I think Notre Dame went to a bowl game that year as well, which hurt also.
Right. Yeah. Now, but then after that week, you would think that, okay, ASU's coming to town. ASU's ranked number 6 in the nation. They're playing for a Rose Bowl. Arizona just lost to Oregon. But from the beginning of that game on, Arizona looked like the better team. They looked like the team headed to the Rose Bowl. You guys were able to take it right to ASU from the beginning and won that game 28-18. And I remember messaging you last year before the ASU game, and you said you remembered a quote from Larry Smith going into that game. It says, "Leave nothing to be questioned, but much to be remembered." And that game is so memorable because that started the streak. That game started the streak that lasted nine years of unbeaten football against ASU. Just the fact that you guys were able to knock ASU out of the Rose Bowl, they were like number 6. How does that rate as one of your victories that you played a part of?
Well, let me say this: every time you beat Arizona State, it's high on the list, you know, and that is not an understatement. That's a fact. I mean, we went into that game knowing that Arizona State was a team that blitzed a lot. I think that was the best offensive game plan that we had prepared for one team, you know, because they loved the blitz, and we caught them in some bad situations a bunch of times. Defensively, we weren't worried. You know, we weren't inferior of them defensively. I mean, we weren't concerned about stopping them defensively. We just felt like if we did what we were supposed to do on the defensive side of the ball, and our offense gave us a little bit more, that we would beat them. And not only that, if you can't get up for Arizona State, you can't get up for anyone. You know, it just ain't going to happen. And that was another thing. I mean, that was one of them games you didn't need a speech. You didn't need nothing to motivate you. You just needed to play. And another thing I'll tell you, when they came to our stadium with the little roses on their faces and stuff like that, come on, man. You know, Coach Smith and Bobby April used to always tell us, you know, you gotta come out like a bunch of wild dogs. You know, here it is. You know, you're in this alley, and there's only one way out. You know, you can either go through this wall, which is impossible, or you can go through the people that's in front of you. And that was the mindset we had. You know, we was going to go through you. We weren't going to go around you. We weren't going to jump over top of you. We were going to knock you down, run through you, and everything else. So, yeah, Arizona State was just one of them games that, you know, we were always excited to play. And even now in my old age, when we play Arizona State, boy, I want to go out there and get at least one or two plays in, but I know that ain't possible.
Yeah. Daryl Rogers didn't know what hit him in that game, the old ASU coach. But yeah, that was the start of the streak. That 9-year run was about as good as anything that's happened in Arizona football, and you guys started it. There,
oh,
you were
yeah.
a part of that as a senior. Yeah.
Oh,
what do you think about the streak
and, you
that
know,
9 years?
Oh, that I thought it was great. I thought it was awesome. I mean, it gave you bragging rights. I mean, You know, I'm not one of them people who say, well, if we lose all our games, as long as you beat ASU, that's all that matters. No, I want to win every game, and I want to be ASU on top of that. You know, so that streak is set a lot. It set a high level of competitiveness, especially for the type of kids that we started to recruit. I mean, if you think about it, I think for a while there, we probably had some of the best linebackers playing at the U of A for those 9 years. You know, guys, you know, going to the pros and, you know, being Pac-10 player of the years and stuff like that. We were able to recruit and compete, you know, against other Pac-10 schools, you know, in a way that allowed us to become more competitive. You know, one of the things I will say, you know, with that 9-year streak and with the stuff that Coach Smith did here at the University of Arizona, I know there's some people, you know, who have a bitter taste in their mouth, you know, with Coach Smith leading, but I think if you knew the whole story, you know, you would understand, you know, what the man did. There's no reason on God's green earth why that man is not in the U of A Hall of Fame. I don't understand that. I can't comprehend that one. You know, and if there's some people administratively or whatever that's bitter, they need to get over it and do the right thing. Because say what you want, he put Arizona on the map football-wise. You know,
exactly.
He did. And he should be in the Hall of Fame.
And he did it under tough circumstances.
Oh, yeah, we didn't have a bunch of five-star guys and All-Americans. You know, we were those guys, you know, on that front line. We were those grunts. I mean, we were them guys that a lot of people had passed over and, you know, and stuff like that. And to me, them are the kind of people that you want. Those are the people that you want on your team. Those are the kind of players that you want. They're going to work harder. You know, it's going to mean more to them. And Coach Smith was able to get the best out of us. You know, and if you look at the whole picture, when you look at the big picture, you got to applaud and reward him for the other things that he did, for graduating players, you know, for just being that father figure and being there for us and giving us an opportunity, you know. And like I said earlier about my own son, you know, one of the things I try to stress to him is, you know, football is great, basketball, whatever is great. But, man, if you can get that degree, if you can get that piece of paper and someone's paying for you to go to college, you can't beat that. You can't trade that. They can't take that from you. You know? Mm-hmm. Who did you beat last 2 years ago? Nobody knows. But, man, Julius Holt graduated from University of Arizona. And sure did. Got 2 degrees sitting on my wall.
Your son's headed for a great future. You know, with you as you and your wife as parents, that you know, that's the greatest honor that you can have, is knowing that he's going to be in good hands. I have to wrap things up pretty soon here, but I just wanted to get quickly, Julius. What are your thoughts about Rich Rodriguez? I mean, you play for Coach Smith. You're here with Dick Tomey, coached some, you know, Mike Stoops and so forth. But what do you think about Rich Rodriguez as a coach?
Well, I would have loved to have played for Coach Tomey, and I would have loved to have played for Rich Rod. Rich Rod, to me, is a player's coach. I think he gets it. You know, my son just said definitely. Right. I mean, but I think he gets it. You know, I think he's able to relate. You know, I mean, he's approachable. You know. I've gone out and watched them practice. He's a no-nonsense kind of guy. But at the same token, you know, he's teaching. You know, he's doing a little bit more than just the whole football thing. You know, he reminds me of Coach Smith in a lot of ways, you know, because he's teaching those life lessons as well. And you want to play for him. He has your back. You know, I can see from you know, interacting with some of the players when I'm up there, you know, he has those kids' best interests at heart. You know, and there's a lot of coaches that don't think like that. You know, and I won't bring up any a past coach, but, you know, some people get caught up in those dollar signs and you know, trying to be the bigger than the team. You know, I think Rich Rod understands the team will make him who he wants to be. You know, without the team, he's just a coach. Team right. is doing what they're supposed to do, and the players are doing what they're supposed to do. Everything that he needs or to be recognized by is going to come. So those players are going to make him that focal point or that person that everybody's going to want to try to steal from us within the next 2 or 3 years, because it's going to happen. I mean, people are going to try to right. take him from us. And we need to do everything we can to keep him, because the guy, you know, he's on the right track and he's putting everything in place. And so, yeah, I think a lot of it's wrong.
Great, great. I want to talk to you more, Julius, as we get close to the season. I want to touch base with you more about Arizona football and so forth. But, you know, it's been a great honor to have you on here and talk to you, being an Arizona follower that followed that period of football that you played, and now seeing how you've, you know, touched the Tucson community and now with your son, you know, a football player there at South Point, and people are going to learn more about you as we go along. So, you know, I really appreciate the time that you gave me tonight and enlightened some of the fans about your experience there at Arizona. So I really appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and it was a pleasure. And the Tucson community, you know, they welcome me with open arms. You know, they've been there for me, and I couldn't ask for a better place to live and a better university to have attended. So I appreciate that.
Great. All right. Well, take care, Julius. Again, it was great to hear from you. Take care. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.